Welcome to Exotic Pets. I'm Tracy Hotchner, whom you may know as the dog and cat lady, but I'm wearing a different hat here. With the brilliant assistance of my co-host, Dr. Doug Mader, the world-renowned veterinarian specializing in exotic animals, we're here to celebrate all the other pets that share people's lives. This show is for people interested in pets that slither, hop, creep, fly, or swim. From bunnies to iguanas, parrots to ferrets, snakes to tortoises. Dr. Doug is going to teach us the physical requirements of these exotic pets and how to manage the often challenging environments and correct diets essential to their welfare. Dr. Doug Mader is the author of The Vet at Noah's Ark, Stories of Survival from an Inner City Animal Hospital. He is recognized worldwide as a veterinary specialist on exotics and is the author of 4 major veterinary textbooks on reptiles and amphibians. I hope you'll have as much fun listening to our conversations as we have had. We are proud to have ZooMed Laboratories as the sponsor of Exotic Pets. ZooMed has earned its reputation as the number one reptile company in the world, from simple beginnings 45 years ago as a passion project for one man, Gary Bagnall, who still runs it. ZooMed provides supplies and information for every imaginable exotic pet, particularly renowned as the world's expert on UVB and heat lighting. ZooMed manufactures all their reptile supplies, accessories, and tools, which they test on their own collection of animals, which surround everyone at headquarters. Dr. Doug Mader and I are so glad to have you back. This is our second show. We're still feeling very young and fresh and a little bit wet behind the ears. We hope you liked our inaugural show last week. If you didn't catch it, then please do, because it tells you a little bit about who we are and why we're here and what matters to us, which is exotic animals and pets, and also the people who love them and have them. And we want to make sure you're all playing well together. Dr. Doug, one of your biggest specialties, and you have several, is reptiles, snakes. And I would love to just ask you kind of an umbrella question. Why do people have snakes? And I'm not saying that with any intended criticism, just why do they? I've never had a snake. I've had a lot of critters, but I've never had a snake and never had the desire to have one. And I'm not scared of them, but why do people have them? What is it snakes?
That's a great question. And you know what? It's a real personal choice. Why do people drive a Mustang versus a Volkswagen? I think, you know, we've discussed this before, that human-animal bond is huge, and people like having companionship. And so you would say, well, why in the world would they have a snake, for crying out loud? You know, you can pick up a kitten, and you can cuddle it, and you can pet it, and it'll purr, and it makes you feel good. You take a dog for a walk, it wags its tail, it licks your face, it makes you feel good. Why would you have a snake, you know?
Yes.
Believe it or not, Tracy, many snakes have incredible personalities. I won't say all of them do. Some snakes are really out there, kind of on the wild side, because they are wild animals. Even a pet ball python or a boa constrictor, you know, something that's been in captivity, it's not domestic. It's still a wild animal. But all the different animals have different personalities, and there are certain animals, certain snakes in particular, that are extremely popular. And the reason they're popular is because they're easy keepers and they've got really good personalities, Tracy. They actually recognize their owners. You know, they don't have an ear that you can see. And so a lot of people mistakenly assume that snakes are deaf. And they think, well, if they're deaf, they can't hear, so why even bother talking to them? That's absolutely untrue. Snakes do have ears. It's just it's underneath the scales.
Wow.
And science has shown that a snake can hear the same frequency of our human voice. So when I'm talking to a dog or to a cat in the examination room, there's this movement called the fear-free movement, which
yes.
is incredibly important.
Yes.
And the way we handle our dog and cat patients keeps that fear-free alive. That same application should be applied to our snake patients, because even though they don't have external ears, they can hear. So going back to having it as a pet snake, you know, when we talk to our snakes, they can hear us. They know our voice. And it's funny. I've been doing this for so long. If a client were to bring me their pet snake for, let's just say, a routine annual exam, and yes, I do promote routine annual exams in snakes, dogs, cats, and people too.
Yes.
Because prevention is always better than chasing a problem. So they bring me the snake and they're holding it. The snake's cuddled up in their arms or wrapped around their neck or, you know, coiled up in their pocket, nice and calm. And then I'll gently reach over very carefully, talk to the snake, pick the snake up, and it's just moving constantly because my body temperature is different, my feel is different, my voice is different, my everything about me is different. And so snakes respond to their owners. They actually respond really well to their owners. So this is really circling back now. You pick up the kitten, you pet it, it purrs, it makes you feel good. You pick up your pet snake that you know, and it knows you, and it cuddles up in your hand. And yes, I'm going to use the word cuddle, and you get that same euphoria, that same oxytocin release that, oh my God, this is great. You know, this is my pet. I love it. I'm being anthropomorphic, but it loves me too. And I really do think snakes do show a bond with certain owners. Absolutely, 100% positive. I will take that to my grave.
Wow, that's so cool. So let me understand this. When a snake is in the person's pocket, in their hand, perhaps on their shoulder, their neck, their arm, they're choosing to be with that human who they're attached to emotionally, if we want to use the word emotionally, and they're very comfortable there and they feel really safe there. When a stranger who even knows the right way to pick up a snake, which would be you, and talk to it, which apparently, unbeknown to many of us, is something you should do in a kindly voice. The reason it's constantly in motion is it's almost like a fight or flight. Is it trying to get away? Is it agitated and nervous and uncomfortable?
I think that's a lot of adjectives, but I think definitely it's so novel that it has to check you out first. And until it's had a chance to get to know you and realize that you're not a threat, its natural response is going to be to go back to its owner or get away.
I'll be darned. So that's the safety place. So it's like go back in the owner's pocket. So in answer to the question, why would you have a reptile? When you understand that that is the bond, could be the bond, and is part of the relationship, it's mutually reinforcing. You and the snake are both really having a bond, and it feels good on both ends of the snake.
Absolutely, I think so. I coined a term a while back called the atypical human-animal bond, because everybody refers to the human-animal bond as a dog and a cat, you know. And, you know, if you look at the definition by the American Veterinary Medical Association, it's really written, you know, dogs, cats, horses, that kind of a thing. But people do have the bond with these atypical animals. So I call it an atypical bond. And people definitely form a bond with a snake. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. And again, it's really going to be human and then species specific. Excuse me. Sorry.
It's part of talking. Sometimes our throat gets caught up. Well,
allergies. Right now. We had some rain and then it got warm and now all the flowers are blooming and I'm paying the price.
Just so everyone knows, Dr. Doug lives in a chunk of paradise in Key West and on a most gorgeous property that looks like paradise, looks like where an exotic vet would live if they could live the dream. So it comes with a lot of tropical flowers.
I am very fortunate. So definitely these animals, specific animals, and I am talking about very specific animals, are very responsive to humans. And I think, you know, the corn snake, which historically has always been one of the top snakes kept as pets in the United States and probably around the world, is one of those that really seems to have that counter bond with the owners. So the owners get the snakes, they grow up with it, they take care of it, and many of these snakes can live for many, many, many years.
Give me an idea of length of life for a corn snake.
Well, it really depends on the snake, but I'd say 20 years is not uncommon.
Wow.
I've heard of older ones, but I would say properly cared for 20 years is certainly not unheard of.
And do you think that when in the corn snake has been so popular, that there's some percentage of people who thought they were so gorgeous, because, boy, they are gorgeous, and had no idea that they were in for the long haul? I mean, do you find that happening in the reptile ownership world, that the length of the lifespan is either an attractant to someone who knows it and thinks, this is great, I don't have to face, you know, my Great Dane's going to die at 9 years old, or do people not realize it and go, oh, my God, this snake is still very much alive, and I plan to go move or have a different life.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Mother's Day coming up real soon?
Yes.
Okay, so I got a shout out to all the mothers who have adopted the snakes from young kids growing up in high school, having pet snakes, and then going off to college, and they find out they can't take their snakes with them because they've grown up and the snakes are still there and they're still alive and doing strong. So what do? They leave the snakes home with mom to take care of, and mom ends up adopting the snakes. God bless their mothers.
Oh, my gosh.
I basically did that with a pair of turtles to my mother when I was growing up. And, yeah, so you're absolutely right. People get these animals and they don't realize how long live they are. And, you know, you might, if you're lucky, live in a place where you can take your snake to college or wherever you move, but sometimes you can't, and then you got to find a home for it. And I tell you, man, when I moved to the Florida Keys 25 years ago, I had the last of my large pythons, and he was about, I can't remember, but I want to say he was probably close to 15, 16 years old when I moved. He was 12 feet long. He was super cool. Oh, my God, what an amazing snake. He knew me. I could call his name. He would come to me. He'd sit in my lap. But when I moved to the Key West, I couldn't get rabbits for him. I knew I couldn't get rabbits because I had come out.
Oh, wait a minute. This is going to be, this is like a whole nother show. You have to find a live rabbit if you own one.
No, that's another show. But I have to be able to feed it. And I had no way to feed it if I moved and took my snake with me to Key West.
Goodness.
And so I ended up finding a home for it. And when I had to say goodbye to that snake, it was like saying goodbye to my best girlfriend.
Wow.
You know, I had it for years and years and years. And trust me, if I would have, I would have brought that snake with me. But, you know, as a pet parent, we have a duty to take proper care of them. And I knew that if I brought him to the Keys with me back then, you know, now you can buy food online. It's different.
Back then, I see.
Okay.
What was his name?
What was his name?
Yeah.
Bucks, B-U-X.
B-U-X.
Yep.
And was it easy to find? Was it easy to rehome him? I mean, we should do a show on how to rehome your reptile.
That's not a bad topic. It was in this case because he lived in the hospital with me in Los Angeles. In fact, he actually has a small role in my book. And so the people that owned the hospital or that bought the hospital for me when I moved, they liked him so much they kept him.
Oh,
he had
goodness.
An absolutely gorgeous cage in the apartments upstairs where the students lived. And yeah, that's a whole different story. The cage was painted by a gangbanger, that one of the ones we rescued from jail. And he painted this beautiful jungle scene in this cage. This cage had waterfalls. And I mean,
oh my goodness.
He was happy to. I'm sure he missed me. He sent me postcards every once in a while. Just kidding.
But,
he probably didn't miss
you probably
me as much
sent them
as I
to him.
Him.
Yeah. I do just always want to say to people, if you haven't already heard the title, The Vet at Noah's Ark, Dr. Doug's wonderful memoir of being an exotic pet vet and starting a clinic in a very dodgy neighborhood, you really will love it. When he says jail and gangbangers, that book is so full of stories of rehomed people, I would like to say. You're one of those few people, Doug, who instead of choosing to only rescue and save animals because you actually can do that, you've done it with people, which is much more difficult. And I definitely salute you for that on every day of the year. So,
hey, Tracy, it's the human-animal bond includes pets and people.
Yeah, and you know, people
are so important.
Yeah. Okay, well, just to wrap up, because we've touched a lot on the idea of reptiles and how they can have this atypical human-animal bond, recognize your voice, recognize your touch, come to you when whistled for, if you will. Those are amazing pieces of information that many people don't know. And there may be people with reptiles who are undervaluing the bond. I mean, there are certainly people with cats who undervalue how many things their cat would like to do with them or would like to do in the world, and they're being ignored. So if you have a snake who gives you the least indication that they know you and like you, you should work a little harder at reaching out to them a bit more. And maybe on another show, Dr. Doug will talk about how to enhance your atypical human reptile bond. I think that's really important, Doug. There may be a whole missed aspect to reptile ownership. People may think they should just watch them or look at them in the terrarium.
Well, I think that goes, you know, it goes across the species, Tracy. I mean, we as the owners tend to set the bonds.
Yes.
Cats are a different story. You know, I mean, that's a whole other animal because cats kind of set the bonds with us. But we as owners tend to set the bonds on how much interaction we want to have, even with our dogs, with our fish, with our bird, with our cats. And oftentimes they want more. And
yes.
if we're willing to give them more, they are more than happy to take it because they enjoy that bond with the people just like we enjoy the bond with them.
Well, I think this is something, there's so much to be explored in this show. And interestingly, which is why I love you and I love this show, and I really appreciate all the people listening and the fact that you have exotics and the fact that ZooMed makes beautiful products for you, is that there's so much more depth to what goes on between people and all kinds of animals. And there's the superficial stuff, which is interesting and important, and the mechanical stuff, and even the medical stuff. But all of this woo-woo fuzzy stuff is just riveting. And I hope you're all going to follow along with us as we dig a little deeper into what makes exotics such great friends to us, and we hope to be good friends to them. Thank you, Dr. Doug Mader.
Thank you, Tracy. It's always great to talk with you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Exotic Pets, brought to you by the fine family of animal lovers at ZooMed Laboratories, where they make everything you could need to give your exotic its best possible life. Are you an experienced reptile snake breeder or gecko breeder, or are you looking to pick up your first pet bearded dragon? ZooMed is sure to have what you need so you can confidently care for your exotics. If you have a question for Dr. Doug to answer on the show, feel free to reach out to me on our contact page at TracyHotchnerPets.com, spelled TracyHotchnerPets.com. Thanks for listening.